White Rocket Entertainment.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
We welcome you to Jordan Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone.
Let's watch some football. Now everybody, come on everybody.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yo, yo, yo. Let's watch some football.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, but not to AU Wishbone TV, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. And tonight by our new sponsor, Ken Ringer, who is currently on the book tour for his new book, Lorindo, the great Auburn offensive coordinator assistant coach. We welcome him as our new sponsor this week. More about that in a second. But first, I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we are back on audio only, at least for tonight, maybe ongoing, because we've had so many audio issues with the video. It was neat doing video. I hope we can continue to do occasional video shows. But for a variety of reasons that I've complained about for weeks now, we just haven't been able to get good audio quality out of the Google system we were using. So we are back to our old Skype and Skype recorder. And we have the soundboard tied in so that I can do things like this. And so we are ready to rock and roll. What do you think?
I'm ready. I'm excited.
Yes. All right. We're back to our roots, as it were. Tell us now. We have a new sponsor. If the folks didn't understand what I was yapping about, tell them what's going on.
So we've been looking for sponsors for our podcast, and our sponsor this time is the book tour for Lorindo by Ken Ringer, which is a book about Auburn's offensive coordinator under Shug Jordan. And it's the story of a guy who grew up in northern Minnesota, came to the South, played football, played sports at different places, and ended up at Auburn and ended up coaching, you know, some of the best Auburn teams in history. It was one of the biggest individual influencers of Auburn football history. And it's a great story about America because there's some stuff about World War II in there, but it's also a great story about Auburn and Auburn football history. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, you could pick it up. You can get it at the Auburn University bookstore or other local bookstores in Auburn. Get it on Amazon. If you search for Lorindo, which is L-O-R-E-N-D-O, or you could email Ken Ringer directly. His email address is kwringer@gmail.com, and he will happily send you a book, or if you're in the Auburn metro area, he will probably drop one off even. So
that's right. It really is an awesome book. I loved reading it. I loved it how, like, you know, in one chapter he's in Lorindo's in World War II piloting, you know, amphibious assault vehicles against the Japanese, and then, you know, another chapter he's an NBA star or something and coaching basketball at, you know, here and there, and then another chapter he's offensive coordinator at Auburn, and it's just an amazing, you know, it's a remarkable story. Your dad had the insight to realize that nobody had written a book about him, and somebody needed to, and so he did it.
That's right.
And he did it, and it's awesome. So there you go. More about that later. All right. So tonight is the 2015-2016 annual. I guess it's like our third annual. Wishbone Awards, where we look back over the previous season, and we have a variety of categories that John and I have nominated players for. And then we will sort of decide who our overall winner is for each of those categories. And it's always a lot of fun. So we'll get into that in just a minute. Also, I did several polls on Twitter over the last week or so since our last show on a variety of topics. And we have the results of those that we'll kind of dig around, plus our usual antics. Hopefully we got some listener questions. I never know. John is in charge of listener questions, so we'll see about that. And we have a few other things before we're done. So let's get on into it. Are you ready to do the Wishbone Awards?
I'm ready.
All right. Let's do the Wishbone Awards theme music. I guess that's the Wishbone Awards theme music. I have no idea, honestly. I really don't know if that's the... I think it's going to fade out any second now. So... Na, 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 na. All right, so first up, and I kind of hate to have to, you know, I think we should save this one for last. We have a new category this year, and because of the 2015 season, we had to have Disappointment Player of the Year. So I'm going to move it down to right before Player of the Year. How's that?
That's fine.
I'm calling an audible. I'm moving it down to almost to the bottom. Now, so... The first category for the awards this year, and this one is...
And I say huge!
It is huge. That's right, Bernie. This one is the Surprise Player of the Year. And our nominees for Surprise Player of the Year, and I'll let you decide, I'll let you call what you think is the winner, and if I disagree, I'll say I think. And then after we've both given our answers, our audience, I would say...
Please clap.
There you go. So I was looking to see if I have a nice theme song for each of our winners, but... you know, I have a sound clip for every occasion except this one. So I think we'll just go ahead and say Surprise Player of the Year. Our nominees are Blake Countess, Peyton Barber, and Carlton Davis. And the winner is?
I think I'd have to go Carlton Davis.
Carlton Davis. That, you know, I'm kind of torn between Peyton Barber and Carlton Davis just because going into the season, we were talking about Peyton Barber, and you remember that the line on Peyton Barber was we were saying, gee, I hope he gets to see the field some. Who before the season would have thought he would be our 1,000-yard runner for this year, for this past year? I mean, you didn't see that coming, did you?
No, and it's true that he really did come out of nowhere to be the core part of the offense.
But I think on the other hand, with all the young defensive backs that came in, if there was any one of them that was probably getting any hype, it was the one that was the nephew of Michael Irvin or something like that. Just for the name, maybe. I don't think anybody before the season thought Carlton Davis. I mean, I think we all thought he would be good, but we thought all of them would be good. I don't know if anybody thought Carlton Davis would be like the breakout, you know, SEC, all SEC rookie player. Did you have him kind of zoomed in as the specific one like that?
No, absolutely not. We had Jonathan Jones and Holsey going into the 2015 season. And Holsey got hurt, and that opened up a spot for Davis where he played a lot, and that really gave him the opportunity. Tim Irvin is the guy you're thinking of. He played a lot of slot, kind of nickel defensive back. And, you know, Davis was just excellent. He got picked on a lot at the beginning of the year, but he was always in good position. He was close to the receiver. And he just got burned a few times. That's going to happen as a freshman. But as the year went on, you know, he made play after play, and it was really a big factor.
All right. So I guess I will go along with you, and we will say Surprise Player of the Year, Carlton Davis. Okay. Next up on the parade.
Please clap.
Is... the Trovon Reed Award for most hyped stud receiver who does very little. I'm very excited about this new category that we've added. Named it after Trovon Reed, right? because it goes to the wide receiver that there was the most talk about before the season and who ended up really not doing very much at all. And our nominees for the Trovon Reed Award are Jason Smith and Duke Williams. And I think that, well, what's your call on this?
I'm going to vote Jason Smith.
Wow, really?
Well, I have Duke in mind for another award.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, well, that's true. We do have a new award this year. I think that still Jason Smith, he had a pretty good game. I think it was against Texas A&M. He didn't quite live up to what we were hoping for from him. You know, he was, because I believe you said it before, right? He was like the MVP of a high school all-star game, right?
He was. All right, here's question time now. How many receiving yards did Jason Smith have last year?
I'm going to say, I think he actually had most of his big plays running. So,
How many catches did Jason Smith have? Let's go that way.
Well, he had that famous one in the Louisville game that got called back. So I'm going to say he had probably 20.
13.
Wow. I didn't think it was many, but I thought it was more than that. So how many receiving yards did he have?
203.
Okay. Well, remember, he got half of that against Alabama on that Ricardo Lewis style play.
Yes.
And he got the one call back against Louisville that wasn't his fault. How many rushing yards he had?
37.
No way.
On 6 carries. That's right.
So that's about 6 yards a carry. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I still, you don't have Duke Williams stats in front of you, do you?
Sure.
Okay. What did Duke end up having last year? Bearing in mind, he was our senior's.
Are you sitting down?
Go ahead.
Duke Williams, preseason All-American, 12 catches for 147 yards.
Good Lord. Well,
certainly Duke is Duke. They're on TV more than Leave It to Beaver reruns.
There you go.
You got to go with Duke?
I'm going with Duke.
Yeah, I think I can understand that.
Going with the Dukester. That was just, we've said this so many times. There were about 5 players that we counted on to make that team a contender. And, of course, all 5 of them crapped out on us one way or another. But, you know, we have an award coming up to address this, but I'm not sure if Duke's wasn't the most craptacular flank of all.
Yes, by a large margin.
Yeah, well, there's another, at least one, that crapped out pretty craptacularly, too. But all he can do is
blame yourself.
That's right. So, all right, I said Duke Williams. There you go. Our next category in the 2015-2016, I never know how to date these things. The awards we're giving out in 2016, but it's for the 2015 season. Our next award is the Special Teams Player of the Year. And the nominees are Kevin Phillips, Daniel Carlson, and Marcus Davis. That's pretty much the 3 right there.
Mm-hmm.
So Kevin Phillips, Daniel Carlson, Marcus Davis. I think that this one's pretty easy for me. What have you got?
Well, you tell me what you think, then, if you think it's a slam dunk.
It's Daniel Carlson.
He was the man. I would say Phillips wasn't awesome, but the punting the year before was so bad that he made it much better.
Was it? I can't remember what the 2014 punting was like. I thought, when did we have really good punting? I thought we had really good punting. No, seriously. Was it 2013?
2013, we had excellent punting. Remember he pinned him deep every time?
Yeah, yeah.
In 2014, I think Carlson was doing them both, and that was bad.
Oh, right. He kind of conked out halfway through the season trying to
yes.
do it. That's right. That's right. Yeah, okay. And Carlson seemed a lot better as a kicker when he didn't have to do both, too, right? I mean,
that's right.
He was very good, and this year he's going to be awesome. So, okay, so who are you giving it to then?
I'm fine with Carlson.
Oh, right.
And Davis was good, but he wasn't nearly as good as like Quan Bray the year before.
Right, right. Well, he didn't leave the ball on the carpet very much, and that's always the most important thing to me, right? I mean, when I rate punt returners, out of top ten characteristics, the first eight are doesn't leave the ball on the ground. Mm-hmm. Nine and ten is just the whipped cream and the cherry on top. So, all right. So the special teams player of the year is Daniel Carlson, and we will move on. Name of the year. Now, you have said what about this? You know, this is, let me, before I say, this is the category we've had all 3 years because Auburn tends to have players with very unusual and interesting names every year. And, of course, the first year we did it, we had Chandler Shakespeare. And so we basically made it the Chandler Shakespeare Name of the Year Award. We should have put that on there, the Chandler Shakespeare. What did you say the answer should be this year?
I said we should retire the award because there's no Chandler Shakespeare.
There are not that many Chandler Shakespeares in the world. But the Bard has gone off to other things.
And freshman signee Broadarius Ham is not on campus yet.
Yeah. I tend to prefer my ham Broadarius. I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can do your ham, but, you know, honey roasted and smoked. But I tend to prefer it Broadarius style, which I think is a Louisiana method. I'm not sure about that. I know he's from Florida, but I think that Broadariusing your ham is something that they came up with down in the Cajun country. I've got to say, though, I think that there is a name of the year for this year's team.
All right.
Davis.
Oh, there you go.
The name for this of the year for the 2015 Auburn Tigers is Davis. I mean, we were one player away from having all four of our kick returners in the spring named Davis. It sounded like a law firm. It was Davis, 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 and whoever the fourth one was.
I am looking at the current football roster. Would you like to guess how many Davises are on it?
This is the 2016 Auburn Football Tigers of tackle football, yes?
Yes.
I think that there are probably six Davises on it. Did I go over?
Seven.
Wow, look at that. I didn't want to go over, like, you know, Price is Right.
That's it.
Ding, 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 ding. I had the match game sound. I think I'd do it. Wow, seven Davises. I think there's quite a few. Who is it? Is it Williams that we have a bunch? We have two linebackers.
Yes,
we have at least two.
Dara Williams and Trey Williams. Sure.
Yeah. Can we start calling Darrell Williams Lectron? I mean,
he's got to do something first. You don't just walk out there and get that.
But you know what I mean, though, right?
Sure.
Not all of our listeners know, but back in the late Pat Dye era, we had this little scat back running back, the kind that Florida State usually had, but we had one of them too, and his name was Darrell Williams, but he was never called Darrell Williams. He was always called Darrell Lectron Williams, and there's no E on the first. That's just Darrell Lectron Williams. Sounds like somebody that Spider-Man would fight. And I always loved that, And so if we've got a Darrell Williams, I'm thinking he is in line at least. He is in line to be Darrell Lectron Williams. So there you go.
He's got to earn that one.
But he's got to earn it. I agree. Let's see. Go ahead.
I was going to say I got an award to read. Are you ready?
Please clap.
Sure, go ahead.
All right. This award is the Whatever Became of This Player of the Year. So what happened to this guy, basically, during the course of the season? And the nominees are Devontae Lambert, Justin Garrett, and Rudy Ford. And Ford is a little bit unfair because he was really good at the beginning of the year, and then he got in trouble and he kind of disappeared in the middle of the year.
This is for players who kind of disappeared during the season.
Yes.
Is that correct? Okay.
Yes.
So help me out. Devontae Lambert, what happened with him? Because that doesn't ring a bell as something happened.
He was a defensive lineman who was really good in 14, and we thought, man, he's going to be great in 15.
Right.
And he just wasn't.
Huh. Well, he's got some help this year at least.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's safe to say. Yeah, okay, well. And who was the other one?
Justin Garrett.
Yeah. I think that we need to add a new category for next year. If you want to jot this down and put it in your filing cabinet for next we need to add a new category, which is the Justin Garrett Award for the player at A-Day who will never be who is awesome on A-Day and will never be seen again. And this year's winner has to be last year's A-Day guy, the receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Who I can't even think of his name now.
Is it Marlon Humphrey?
No, that's not it. But you know who I'm talking about, though. He was
yes.
the VP of A-Day, lit him up, and then dropped out and then quit the team. He's like, I've won A-Day. I can retire. I'm just going to walk away. It can never get any better for me. I am A-Day champion. So he's like, I am retiring. The Justin, crap, you just said it.
Myron Burton.
No. Oh, yeah, it was Myron Burton. That's right. Myron Burton. He's like, I am retiring the award. You can hang it up. Off I go. So let's go ahead and say it because I think I know. Who was the MVP of A-Day this year? I don't think we have that as a category, do we? Not A-Day. Yeah. Okay. So I don't know that this year's A-Day champion will vanish and never be seen again. Lord, I hope not, based on who I have it as. Who would you say it was? You know, you could give it to that running back and you could be accurate. He probably will never be seen again.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was Daniel.
I think it was Carlson was great because the wind was blowing. He was very impressive.
55 and 52-yard field goals into a swirling breeze in Jordan-Hare Stadium. So, all right. Well, that's enough about that. Let's move on. The next up category is I don't think we did this one. The Melvin Ray Memorial Where Did That Guy Come From Award. And I can't say that without... Okay, so the Melvin Ray Where Did That Guy Come From Award. And those that don't know, this is based on his performance in the 2013 BCS National Championship game against Florida State when he just suddenly, like Nightcrawler, he teleported into the middle of the field, as John said, like he'd been dropped out of a helicopter. That's why we started calling him the helicopter, Blue Thunder, Airwolf, and caught that. It was a touchdown pass, wasn't it?
I can't remember if he scored on that play or not, but it was a big play in the game.
Well, I think he took it to the house. I think he made a couple of moves on about the 5-yard line and took it to the house. And so, who are our nominees? Who do you have our nominees for?
Melvin Ray was still on the team last year. He has to be the number one nominee.
Yes, it's his name is on the trophy. His name is on the trophy.
And I say you.
That's right. It's huge. Who else is up for it?
I thought about Peyton Barber just as an out of nowhere story.
That's what I've got as a nominee. What do you think?
It's tough to give it to anybody but Melvin Ray, though.
Oh, let's give it to Melvin Ray. Let's give it to Melvin Ray. There we go. There it is. All right. Next category, rolling right along, is the Eric Smith Tough Guy Award. Man, Eric Smith was a great blocking H-back fullback on the 2010 National Championship team. I believe he got hurt on the first play against Oregon, or was that something?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But he was awesome that year. And I'll do the nominees this time. So the nominees we have for Eric Smith Tough Guy Award, Peyton Barber. There's no doubt about that. He had some amazing runs, like the one late against Jacksonville State that basically mm-hmm. saved the game for us. Man, that run was amazing. I don't think it gets near enough attention. Javon Robinson, whoo, that's like Muhammad Ali out there bashing his way through. And then Cameron Petway. Okay, so drum roll. And the winner of the Eric Smith Tough Guy Award?
I think you got to go Peyton Barber.
Oh,
I mean,
my God.
There it is, Peyton Barber. He really did save our season from being much worse than it would have been, you know, even.
Well, and he didn't have the breakaway speed, and he didn't have the elusiveness, the kind of the shifting and kind of spinning and all that stuff. So he took a lot of hits, but he kept moving, he kept getting yards, and he kept getting back up and taking the ball again. And so I have an enormous amount of respect for him for that. So I think Petway, you know, on a per carry basis, he was incredibly physical. And you saw it some in the A-Day game too. That guy kind of brought the hammer sometimes, but
yeah.
No, it's got to be Barber.
Yeah, nobody ever really looked at Peyton Barber during last season and said,
"What are you? Some kind of doomsday machine, boy."
I mean, but he still was a quality back, and he did have some moves. He had more moves than, I mean, how do you think it's going to work out in the NFL for him?
Honestly, I don't think he's going to make it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't feel like there is a little something special about him for sure, but the NFL is tough.
It is. It's very tough, and they view running backs as a disposable commodity. So maybe he gets on somewhere, you know, in a backfield with three or four of the running backs, and he, you know, shares a load and carries the ball some. But I'm hopeful for him. I hope he gets a chance. But one of the things the NFL really wants is speed when the running back is in the open field, because the closing speed of the defense is so fast. And I'm just not sure Barber has it.
No, I agree. I agree. I mean, we hope. We certainly do hope. Okay, we're down to the one that I moved down, because this one has just got, you know, so many nominees. Next up, John, is the Disappointment of the Year Award. This is one that I hate that we even have to have on there, but we do. The Disappointment of the Year, and our nominees, you might as well sit down. Here we go. The nominees for Disappointment of the Year: Jeremy Johnson, perhaps you've heard of him, Javon Robinson, Carl Lawson, Duke Williams, the entire offense, the wide receiver core, and I got to say pretty much the whole season. All right.
You know who we left off there was the offensive coaches.
Yeah, we got like an 8-way tie, I'm afraid. Do you have one, though, that really kind of stands out as your disappointment of the year?
Before I answer, I am the guy that wrote the Jeremy Johnson will be great and be a Heisman contender article that's still up on the War Eagle Reader if you want to go read it. So,
very brave to point that out.
Everything lives forever on the internet. So, to me, it's got to be Duke Williams. I think he had so much talent, so much potential, and an offense that wanted to feature him and get him the ball. And, you know, the opportunity was there for him, and he did not take advantage of it.
I think that I'm going to go with Duke Williams as well, simply because Jeremy Johnson is still with the team and still trying. Javon Robinson is, you know, he had to get his act together in terms of several. He was slightly injured, and he also was probably not, you know, with the program quite, but he's still still out there working hard. Carl Lawson had an unfortunate another injury, but he's been working hard. Nobody would dare say Carl Lawson doesn't work hard, certainly not to his face. And the entire offense, you know, certainly I think has a potential to be better. The receivers have a potential to be better, especially this fall. The one on there that is done and dusted is Duke Williams. He crapped out, and then he got kicked out. And he has nobody to blame but...
Blame yourself.
That's right. So when the next season starts, when the next NFL team starts...
Larry Bird's not walking through that door, fans. Kevin McHale's not walking through that door. And Robert Parrish is not walking through that door.
And probably Duke Williams is not walking through anybody's door. He had a horrible, horrible what do you call it? The workout deal, you know? Yeah. Everything.
Pro day.
Yeah, everything just went completely with him. So in a year of disappointments, congratulations to Duke Williams on being the biggest disappointment in a year of disappointments. In fact, we may even have to make this the Duke Williams Disappointment of the Year Award. And that is something you don't need in your life, is for that be hung on your neck, but it is. So that was disappointing the year. There was one other thing I was going to mention about that, and I can't remember now what it was, so I guess I'll move on.
Can I say something else about that?
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing about that that's so disappointing is, when was the last time Auburn had like an all-conference, all-American level wide receiver? Sammy Coates was really good, but coming into a season,
right?
You know, we didn't know how good Sammy Coates was heading into 2013.
Right.
And, you know, coming into the 2015 season, Duke Williams was on a lot of preseason All-America list, and he was an all-conference, preseason all-conference receiver. And so that's the other part is, you know, we have very few, because of the offense, we have very few receivers who are at that level, and that's the other thing that just made it even worse to me.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I got to insert one here that got left out because I think we do have a winner for it. We've been – the last 2 years, we've had a category called the coach who most deserved the beating we gave him. And I got to say that, you know, we only won a few games even of worth noting there. But I think you got to go all the way back to Dragon Con weekend in Atlanta and say Bobby Petrino. Anytime you can beat Bobby Petrino, it's a good day. And he deserved every beating he gets.
Bobby Petrino. I'd say, Kevin Sumlin a close second.
Yeah, but I don't have a burning dislike for Kevin Sumlin. I kind of like Kevin Sumlin, but Bobby Petrino, every time you can beat him, just strategically you need to, and then, you know, on top of that, the man needs a beating, so it worked out pretty good. I mean, we didn't give him as big of a beating as... You know, it's funny that the way things turned out, that game played out back exactly the way that you and I were kind of saying it would. Remember in preseason, we were like, some of these people were like, oh, Auburn's going to beat Louisville 50-0. I'm like, Louisville almost beat Florida State the national championship year. They got a great defense, you know, and little did we know that Jeremy would be air mailing them care packages. So that game came out a lot more like I expected, which was very close, but thankfully we won. And I was there. Yay, finally. Now we get to the last two. And first up is the 2015 Player of the Year. And the nominees for Player of the Year are Blake Countess, Peyton Barber, Casanova McKenzie, and Daniel Carlson. Who is your Player of the Year for 2015? Drum roll.
It's tough.
You know, the funny thing about it is that Sean White didn't make the nominees for Player of the Year or Disappointment of the Year. He just kind of had a kind of a, that's all right, kind of a season, you know?
Yeah, kind of there.
We really didn't think we were going to see much of him. We ended up seeing a lot more of him than we thought. Some games he was very good. Some games he was kind of, ugh. And if you go back, I wanted to mention this. If you watch War Room Eagle's cut-up videos on YouTube, just search War Room Eagle, and he's got a whole channel of them, which are awesome. You can watch, like, the entire Auburn game against, you know, Texas A&M or Alabama or whatever in 10 minutes and just see Auburn's offense against their defense or Auburn's defense against their offense or the special teams separately. And so when you do that, you can really get a sense of how good the quarterbacks are, how good the running backs are, how good the receivers. Do you know what really jumped out at me when I watched the cut-ups of the offense over several games from last year, John?
What?
One player kept making me thud my head on the desk. It was not Jeremy Johnson.
It was Ricardo Lewis?
It was Ricardo freaking Lewis. For every one catch that Ricardo Lewis made, there were like three that he acted like the ball was a hornet that he just couldn't get out of his hands and away from fast enough. Just drove me up the wall. There were so many times it'd be like 3rd and 15. Oh, perfect pass to Ricardo, and he's got, oh crap, the ball's on the ground, and he's lying there beating his fist on the ground. I'm serious. I said this years ago, and I'll say it again. If you cannot bank the ball off of two defenders, he can't catch it. You got to use him as a running back. Oh, and that's one other topic I wanted to ask you real quick. I keep interrupting our thing to do this. Should we ever run the jet sweep again?
Yes.
When was the last time it worked with somebody that was not named Ontario McCaleb? When was the last time that it didn't lose 4 yards? Mm-hmm. I mean, a couple of times that Ricardo ran it, he got about 4, 5, 6 yards, right? But he also got stopped behind the line. Now, do you blame that play? Have defenses caught up with it? Or do you blame the outside blocking of the other receivers? Like Duke Williams was standing there eating a sandwich, and so Ricardo got up for a loss.
I blame the blocking of the receivers, and I blame the rest of the offense, too. I mean, the defensive backs have to fear that the quarterback might throw the ball over their heads, for one thing, so the safeties are rushing up to the line of scrimmage, and then they also have to worry about, you know, is the quarterback going to run it, or, you know, what's going to happen to the running back? If they're not worried about those things at all, if they're not worried about the ball getting thrown over their head, you know, for a deep pass, then the safety's going to creep up, and it makes it easy to defend that play. So,
yeah, if we had
and it helps to have a guy with world-class speed running the ball out there, too.
Oh, yeah. Although, to be fair, Corey Grant was extremely fast, and I don't think after the first game of the 2013 season he ever had another decent run in that position.
Nope.
So, all right, I just wanted to throw that out there. All right. So, did we decide on the player of the year?
To me, it comes down, I mean, on defense, I think Countess was really valuable, but I think it comes down to, I think McKenzie was more valuable than Countess on defense.
Okay.
I think he made a lot of tackles. He led the team in tackles for loss. He played multiple positions. You know, say he was playing a lot of the year out of position, a defensive end. But I think it's got to be Peyton Barber. I mean, I think the offense was a train wreck for most of the year, and I think he carried the offense by himself in a lot of games.
The thing is, though, toward the end of the season, Javon Robinson kind of took over. I think Peyton was banged up a little bit, you know, but
he did.
But Robinson kind of took over. So I'll give it to Peyton Barber, but with reservations, because I don't think anybody stood out as great last year. If they had, we wouldn't have been 7-6.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Peyton Barber certainly since we were rooting for him. He kind of came out of nowhere. And he got 1,000 yards, and that to me, and he helped us win several important games. And any game that we won last year was an important game. Speaking of which, the game of the year, the game of the year.
Oh, it's the worst one. This is a big one. Hear that, Elizabeth?
All right, here's the big one. The nominees for game of the year:
Louisville, Kentucky, Texas A&M, Memphis.
Now, I have to say, the fact that those are the four nominees for Game of the Year speaks volumes about our situation.
Oh, my God!
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
It's a trap!
So, Louisville, Kentucky, Texas A&M and Memphis, which is your game of the year?
And none of those games were in Auburn.
Wow. What was the game? Well, we only won three more games, Jacksonville State, and then whoever the other cupcake was.
Idaho.
Idaho. And what was the other home game win?
San Jose State.
So our home win, you're telling me that our home schedule last year, we won three games at home?
Yes.
And they were the three cupcakes?
Yes.
Who were the other two home games besides Alabama and Georgia?
The Mississippi schools.
Wow. Okay, well, you know, looking at it that way, the season doesn't look as good. It looks even worse than I thought. Wow. All right, so we were road warriors last year. Okay, so that's pretty much your choices that you had to choose among Louisville, Kentucky, Texas A&M, and Memphis. What are you thinking?
It's got to be Memphis, to me.
I have a hard time with this one because the defense didn't look good, and we had to outscore freaking Kentucky, so that one's out. The Louisville game, I was very excited to win that, and I actually got to go – but Jeremy imploded, and it was one of those, and then everybody got hurt. You know, Louisville was the game where all the, where everything fell apart, and we never quite got it back together again. So that leaves Texas A&M. You know, the only good thing came out of Louisville was that we beat Petrino and won the game. Texas A&M and Memphis, to me, I think I enjoyed watching the Texas A&M game more just because the offense was more consistent all the way through it. In the Memphis game, the offense didn't really wake up and get going until like the second half.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the entire team played a more complete game against Memphis.
Yes.
Offense, defense, special teams. I think the offense played its best, most consistent game against A&M.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to say game of the year was Texas A&M. You going to say Memphis?
I'm going to say Memphis.
All right, there we go. So they each get a vote. That's cool. So we have a tie. Okay. Let me just say then, that has been – have we had any other categories I don't know of?
No.
All right. Mercifully. Mercifully. The – whoops, sorry. Didn't mean to play it twice. The 2015-2016 Wishbone Awards are done.
I had one other category I was going to do, but I didn't, which was Van's Rant of the Year. And I was going to combine your rants where the, you know, the anti-Gus rants versus the, you know, the Petrino Auburn fan rants,
yeah,
versus something else you're ranting about in the middle of the year, the people giving up on Jeremy or whatever. And I wanted to do a poll with those and have that be an award, but I couldn't come up with the best examples.
Well, speaking of, I like it. I have plenty of rants, but speaking of polls, we have a little bit about that. We may want to hold that over till next week or next time, since we kind of are
okay
pushed for time. But I do want to get in our a quick break here where we can point out that we are sponsored by the Lorindo Book Tour, Ken Ringer's Lorindo from White Rocket Books. And we actually have a trivia question as part of our little Lorindo break here. I'll ask you the trivia question in just a second, and we'll give the answer at the very end. But here's the word from the author. He says, the word is spreading about this book. A number of former players are calling or writing how much they love the book. Several have called to say how much they appreciate me writing the Lorindo book. And that is awesome, because the former players have really kind of rallied behind this book. They loved Coach Lorindo, and they like having the book out there. So, again, you can find the Lorindo on Amazon.com, or any bookstore can get it in for you if they don't have it. And as our sponsor, Mr. Ringer, and the book tour has the following question for us, John. Here's the question. Who were the offensive coordinators for our two Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks? Auburn has two quarterbacks who've won the Heisman Trophy. Who were their offensive coordinators? And we will see if you can figure that out, and we'll give the answer at the very end. Now, we'll hold over our Twitter poll discussion to next week. I ran several Twitter polls, and I got some interesting stuff to talk about there. Maybe I can fit a couple more in, and we can just do a whole, you know, main discussion about that.
Okay.
While we're here in the off season and not much else is going on. In fact, you know, there's so little going on right now that I've turned on the War Eagle Sports Radio app every day since like Thursday, and it hasn't been updated. Now, I don't blame them. There's just nothing to, you know, none of the shows are doing shows right now because there's not really anything to talk about. Why, you know, why would they? We had the Wishbone Award. Who are we wouldn't have done a show? But they don't have Wishbone Award, so they're not doing a show. So there you go. So it's just a very slow time. I do, though, have
Factoid of the Week.
Factoid of the Week.
And just real quick, my Factoid of the Week. I was doing some research related to Auburn under Tuberville, under Coach Tuberville. And I was wondering whatever happened to Kenny Irons, because he had such a big year in 2005. And honestly, John, I thought he was like a Brent Fullwood 1 year and gone to the NFL. But, you know, Kenny Irons was our featured running back in 2006. He was there in 2006 along with Brad Lester and some of them. But you don't really remember Kenny Irons doing much in 2006, do you?
No.
I mean, 2006 was the year that we won with defense.
Mm-hmm.
That's the year we beat Alabama and Nebraska both by holding them to just like nothing on, you know, no offense at all. And do you remember this? The 2006 season is the season where our touchdown drives against Alabama and Nebraska started on the average of about the 25-yard line of them. The defense would turn the ball over, and we would punch it in, and we would win like 17-3 or something. So Kenny Irons just did not have a huge – I think he got hurt part of that year, but he did go pro. And do you know what became of him in the NFL?
I do not.
I was very shocked about this. He was drafted by the Cincinnati Bengals and was all set to play probably alongside Rudy Johnson. And that would have been a heck of a backfield. And he actually blew out his knee in like the last preseason game and went on the physically unable to perform list and then was released. And that's the last I've heard of him.
I remember that story now about the preseason.
Yeah. So he apparently, you know, never played in the NFL again. He played in the preseason of that of the, I guess, the 2007 season, and that was it. That's really a shame because he was a tough, tough running back. If people don't remember him, you need to go back and look at some videos of that 2005 team, man. Kenny Irons.
Go back and watch the LSU game.
Oh, yeah. He came out and told ESPN or whoever before the game he was going to have 200 yards on that LSU defense, which was a SEC-winning defense that year. And he put up 200 yards on them plus.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Real quick, let's get a few.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
Wow, did that just get really loud?
No.
Okay, maybe it's been something on my end. I haven't been able to hear my soundboard hardly at all, and I just clicked on the volume thing. I didn't even move it. I just clicked on the volume thing, and suddenly it got really loud. Let me do that again, folks.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
Holy cow, that's loud. Well, we've been having audio problems all along, and now I just found one more. So there we go. All right, well, now it's much louder. What listener questions do we have?
First question comes from Harvey Ferrier, who says, in light of the current state of Auburn football, has the 2013 national title loss grown more painful?
It could not be any more painfuler. That is the most painful. You know, somebody on Twitter actually told me, one of our correspondents on Twitter that's a big Auburn fan, said that they said they were at that game, the Florida State game, and it was just like, you know, whipped cream on top and losing it. They're like, well, you know, we lost it, but we still had a great season and it doesn't bother me that much. And I said, it's my lowest point as an Auburn fan, probably. I mean, it's close. It's between that and the week we found out about the Cam scandal. Allegations, but
the 2003 Georgia Tech game is up there for me.
Oh yeah, I was in the Georgia Tech stadium. I actually was right there next to the Georgia Trek. Live long and prosper. I'm doing the Spock hand, the Georgia Tech student section, and they were giving me crap for 3 hours. But no, I think my lowest point, though, was after losing the Rose Bowl, just because the BCS, because I wanted that so bad. I hated Florida State. It was a great opponent to beat down, you know, and win that second national championship in four years. And I hated losing it. I hated what we lost by losing it, you know?
Well, and the other part is, nobody talks about this anymore, but that Florida State team was hyped as like the greatest team of all time. They hadn't, you know, they crushed everybody that year. They had a record number of players drafted, all that kind of stuff. And they were supposed to blow us out of the stadium, and Auburn led them for 59 minutes and, you know, 45 seconds or whatever. So,
oh, geez, it's just painful to think about. Next question. Can't do it.
That wasn't bad enough. Next question comes from Auburn Tweep, who says, given 2010-2013, what is a good year for Auburn? It just beat Alabama, sweep A-Man Corner, win the West, win the SEC. What is a good year?
That's an eternal question that we always face, and And it's because, I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. We don't really have time tonight to get into all of it, but I always say it's part of it is that Alabama is our main rival, and they're having this incredible success. And so you get this dichotomy relationship where it's either like if Alabama is the top, we're the bottom. You know, Alabama fans are completely convinced that there's two teams in college football, number one and number nothing, and we're number nothing and they're number one, right? I mean, the fact that there's, you know, 120 teams and we could be like number eight, you know, we're still not them, so we're nothing. I mean, it just – so that plays into the answer to that question, which is that Auburn fans kind of perceive that a successful season is like winning it all, even though we rarely win it all. Well, we do go undefeated a lot, honestly, but we don't win the national championship a lot. And so Auburn fans kind of have this perpetual sense of disappointment that we're not winning national championships every year when, other than Alabama, nobody is doing that. You know, we have had as much national success as anybody, probably more than almost anybody, over the last 10 years or more. And yet we wrote a book about that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, because Alabama's doing better on a year-to-year basis, it is perceived as somehow disappointing. So I've always said Auburn should be I've always said Auburn should win 9 games most years, 11 or 12 in a good year, and 6 or 7 in a bad year. And that's kind of where I think we are as a program. What do you think?
I think that's fair. I mean, I think, you know, you can't have a good year unless you're beating several of the big rival teams. I mean, that's just how it is. But it's Georgia, Alabama, LSU. If you lose all those big games, you're not having a good year.
Right.
So, yeah. I have one last question for you, which I really want your opinion on, which is somebody asked us about the ESPN.com interview with Malzahn and what we thought.
Yes. Oh, I thought it was great. I was glad to hear him say some of those things. He basically, if you didn't see it, Gus had an interview with, I guess, Chris Lowe of ESPN, and Gus was saying there were several things he said. I mean, it was funny. The takeaway from that interview was just ridiculous, right? The big media takeaway was Gus Malzahn wants Auburn in the SEC East. Well, you know, Auburn's always wanted to be in the SEC East. That was not news. I tweeted, you know, it's funny. Every day should be Saturday. Well, no, it was Saturdays Down South. I get them confused. Saturdays Down South tweeted something about, you know, this shock that Auburn was talking about being in the SEC East. And I tweeted to them and said it's shocking that it's taken them 24 years to realize what Auburn fans wanted in 1992. You know, this is not something new. I kind of got into a little back and forth discussion, pleasant, you know, with Scalise at AL.com, too, about that, because he was saying you wouldn't like it if you got it. I'm like, we liked it all the way up until 1992. You know, I mean, I don't know why we would suddenly not like playing Florida and Tennessee and Georgia every year like we used to. But yeah, that was the takeaway. But I think that the much more important thing in that interview, much more important than any talk about the SEC East, was Gus saying, I had to act like a, like he said, he kept saying, he said this like 3 or 4 times. He said, I had to act like a CEO last year, and I'm not a CEO, I'm a football coach. Now, I kind of wondered how much Muschamp played into that. What did you read into him saying? I mean, because the rest of it was him mm-hmm. saying, we're going to get back to good old football, we're going to get back to what I do best, we're going to get back to playing Auburn football, et cetera, et cetera. That's great. That's what I want to hear. He took responsibility for the, you know, the bad parts and all that. That's great. But the CEO thing made me wonder if he was talking about Will Muschamp.
No, I thought it was the offense too. I think that he tried to be a CEO coach last year and delegate authority to people and say, you know, Rhett, Craig, whoever, you help me with the offense. Yeah. This offense is a, you know, we're men more be hands off yeah. and run the big picture. And I think what he realized is that didn't work, and when his teams work well, it's because he's in there with his hands on people saying, this is how we're going to do this. This is how I want this. It's going to be my way. And yes. I think that was the two main things I took away from that were, number one, he accepted responsibility and accountability for last season. And he said, I failed, you know, I did the wrong thing here by being more hands off. And he said, I'm going to change my behavior and I'm going to go back to what I did in all those years at work to be more hands on. And I think we've heard the stories in the spring that he's been all over the place on the field with every single position group being hands on as a coach. And so I thought that was great news. I was very happy with that.
Please clap.
Yeah, basically the offense says, Coach, we need you.
But James, I need you.
So does England.
So does the offense, right? We've got to have, and when I heard him say that, I was just. Because that is what we want to hear. We want Gus out there, the mad scientist in the lab. The mad scientist, John, needs to be in the lab. He does not need to be in the boardroom.
That's that good analogy, because that's what he was.
He needs to be pouring chemicals into beakers.
Making stuff explode.
Oh, yeah. And going boom, boom. All right. I think that's probably a good place to stop. If we have any other questions, maybe we can hold them over, because we're over time. But I will give you the quick answer to Mr. Ringer's AU trivia question. Question. He asked, which were the two offensive coordinators of our two quarterbacks who won the Heisman Trophy? What do you got, John?
They were Gus Malzahn and Gene Lorenzo.
They were indeed. Ding, 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 ding. Woo! Ding, 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 ding. I got to get sound effects for cheering and stuff. I got it on the old the match game thing. I have to get that. All right. So Gene Lorenzo and Gus Malzahn were our two offensive coordinators. And that's what a shock that it figures into Lorenzo. All right. I'm going to skip Can't Let Go because my wife's going to let me go in the yard to sleep if I don't wrap this up. I guess what we've learned tonight from me, I think we've learned that it was really hard to decide who disappointed us the most this year, this past year.
That's true.
What did you learn tonight?
I learned it was tough to decide who disappointed us, and it was tough to decide who was the most valuable player on the team.
That's a good point. All right. Well, that was the 2015-2016 AU Wishbone Awards show with a few extra tidbits added on. We'll be back in the next week or two to talk about some polls that I will run on Twitter. So if you want to participate, I'm going to run a few more this week. Look for that, either from my account or from the AU Wishbone account. Otherwise, I think we're going to get on out of here. Don't forget about Season of Our Dreams and Decades of Dominance, too. Those are other two Auburn books from White Rocket. And, of course, our new sponsor, Lorenzo, and we really appreciate having the book tour on board. John, all I can say at that point is our time is up. We thank you for yours, and War Eagle.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Very good. I think the audio sounded a lot better, at least on my end. Hopefully it recorded that way.
Yeah, that sounded great.
Very good. All right. Go to bed.
Night.